My name is Diana Bartlett. I am a health scientist at the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. And this presentation will discuss vaccination coverage levels of the HPV vaccine for 2006 through 2007, as measured by the Immunization Information System Sentinel Site Project. CDC will use various methods to assess HPV vaccination coverage, including surveys, the Vaccine Safety Data Link project that you just heard about, and immunization information systems. The main surveys will include the TEEN module of the National Immunization Survey, or NIS-TEEN as it's otherwise known, which was administered in the fourth quarters of 2006 and 2007 to persons 13 to 17 years of age to provide national uptake estimates. The NIS Adult module, or NIS Adult, was administered from May through August 2007 to persons 18 years or older, and there are no current plans for 2008 for this survey. The national data collected were collected in the NIS Adult. National data, it was focused on national data, and estimates were based only on household reports, when typically the National Immunization Survey uses provider reported information to base its estimates upon. Data will be published, or planned to be published, in a peer-reviewed journal this summer for the NIS Adult. The National Health Interview Survey and Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, or Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, added HPV vaccine questions in 2008. And for BRFSS, states must choose to use the HPV module. Six states are currently using the BRFSS child HPV module, vaccine module, which are Delaware, New York, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Texas, and West Virginia. Delaware, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Texas, and West Virginia are currently using also the adult HPV vaccine module for BRFSS. And lastly, we have Immunization Information Systems, or IIS. CDC works with immunization grantees on the IIS Sentinel Site project and has collected HPV vaccine data since 2006. I'll discuss this project in more detail in some upcoming slides. For those of you who don't know, an IIS is a confidential population-based computerized data system based usually in a state public health department that were designed primarily to consolidate the vaccination data of all children within a geographic area for multiple vaccine providers, provide coverage assessments, and many now have the ability to exchange data with electronic medical records. Although the focus has primarily been on children less than 6 years of age, we can see on this slide that as of the end of 2006, about 66% of the 11 to 18-year-olds in the U.S. have two or more records in an IIS, and even 18% of adults 19 years of age or older have at least one vaccination recorded in an IIS. So where did data come from for immunization information systems? The primary sources are clinical data entered in by health provider staff and health departments, billing data, and downloads of birth certificate information. But many states are now recruiting STD clinics, juvenile detention centers, gynecologist offices to better capture adolescent vaccines and the HPV vaccine in all in adolescents and adults. Since the mid-1990s, CDC has provided immunization grants to the 50 states, Washington, D.C., and five large cities. These grants include funds to develop and implement IIS. Core data elements that IIS should contain include full name, date of birth, race, ethnicity, gender, vaccine information, the provider who administered the dose, and a patient's eligibility for vaccines purchased under the Federal Vaccines for Children program. Currently, eight grantees receive supplemental CDC grant funds to serve as IIS sentinel sites for IIS-based evaluation projects for the 2008 through 2012 project period. For this study's analysis, we utilized the data from immunization information systems participating in the sentinel site project from 2004 through 2007. The project assesses vaccination coverage quarterly for persons less than 19 years of age, and all grantees implemented data quality improvement plans. Although the state IIS collects data from the entire state, the Sentinel Site area of study or evaluation consisted of a geographic area of contiguous counties that had high levels of provider participation, both public and private, and most of the children enrolled in the IIS. The 2004 through 2007 project period has six grantees participating, which included Arizona, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, Oregon, and the District of Columbia, and I see many of them in the audience today. The project performs routine assessments of child and adolescent vaccination administration patterns in special cities like the one I'll be describing to you today. The sites, as you can see, are very diverse. For example, Arizona focused on the northern counties and has a larger representation of Native Americans. Only seven counties are represented. DC includes the eastern part of the district with its large Medicaid population. It's very urban. And Michigan included all of the state in its Sentinel Site area, except for the Detroit area, and has almost 1 million adolescents in the Sentinel Site area, in comparison to rural areas such as Minnesota, with a Sentinel Site area of about 16,000 adolescents. The Sentinel Sites have been collecting data on HPV vaccine, as I've mentioned, since 2006, specifically August 2006. And although most of the early data indicated vaccination levels for at least one dose of HPV vaccine to be less than 1% of females in this age group, over the last year, some sites like Oregon have now vaccinated as much as 21% of its adolescent females as of the end of quarter four, 2007, the red column. The average across the sites is 12.2% for quarter four, 2007. This graph illustrates the mean percentage of females less than 19 years of age enrolled in the IIS with at least one dose of the HPV vaccine by age and by quarter. Essentially, it takes the mean of the percentages you saw on the previous slide and breaks it down by age group. The uptake of the HPV vaccine has increased slowly over 2007, with the largest gains in the last two quarters of 2007. This graph illustrates the age distribution of adolescent females vaccinated with at least one dose of HPV vaccine as of our most recent quarter of available data, quarter four, 2007. Although the vaccine is recommended for 11 to 12-year-olds, some states, like Arizona, have more 13 to 15-year-olds getting the vaccine, while states like Michigan and Minnesota have more 16 to 18-year-olds getting the vaccine. And although the majority of HPV vaccine doses have gone to females, we should note that there is a small percentage of males receiving the vaccine off-label. For a small percentage of HPV vaccine doses administered, the IIS did not have a gender of vaccine recipient recorded. This slide is unweighted and mostly shows has Michigan data represented, since it's the largest population represented in our Sentinel Site project. This slide describes the mean doses distribution among the six sites. Among HPV vaccine recipients by age group, it looks like over half of the recipients have received one dose. It appears that the 16 to 18-year-olds have a slightly higher percentage of receiving three doses of vaccine compared to the 11 to 12-year-olds, but it's all very small percentage points. And this slide and the next two slides look at dose distribution by age group over all the quarters of the available data. And the vaccination, as we can see, is slowly increasing for at least the second dose and third dose. For the 11 to 12-year-olds, we see that about 10% of the age group has completed the series by quarter four, 2007. For the 13 to 15-year-olds, we see that almost 12% of this age group has completed the series by quarter four, 2007. And for the oldest age group, we see that over 13% have completed the series, right here. Of the females who received HPV vaccine, many received a non-HPV vaccine at the same time. This seems to be especially evident in the 11 to 12-year-old population across all sites. Looks like the lowest is Minnesota with 70%, but everyone else is between 70 and 90% for their 11 to 12-year-olds. We were also curious to see how the uptake of the HPV vaccine compared to the uptake of the adolescent meningococcal conjugate vaccine, or MCV4, with the same population of 11 to 18-year-olds in quarter four, 2007. The MCV4 vaccine was licensed in January 2005, recommended by ACIP in February 2005, and joined the CDC contract in April 2005. By the end of 2007, Arizona, DC, and Oregon had about 18% of its adolescents vaccinated with one dose, and the average across the sites for at least one dose of the HPV vaccine in this quarter, in comparison, was 12.2%. One important strength of this study is that the data set includes data from over 1.2 million enrolled adolescents. And some limitations include that the data are reported to CDC in aggregate format and don't have discrete vaccination dates for each adolescent. So it limits some of the analysis that we can do. Also, some providers who have not offered vaccines in the past may not be offering HPV vaccine, and all HPV vaccine providers may not be enrolled in the IIS. This may lead to an underestimate of vaccination coverage. In conclusion, despite the ACIP recommendation to vaccinate the 11 to 12-year-old females, the majority of females receiving the vaccine appear to be older. As time passes, we'll start to see more series completion, and it's beginning to be reported now, as we can see from the slides. And the majority of HPV-vaccinated 11 to 12-year-olds are receiving concurrent doses of a non-HPV vaccine. We also see some limited administration of HPV vaccine to males. Some next steps planned for our HPV vaccine uptake assessment include that the IIS Sentinel sites will continue to monitor HPV vaccine uptake in its new Sentinel sites, which include Arizona, Colorado, Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, New York City, Oregon, and Wisconsin for the years 2008 through 2012. We'll further analyze information related to same-day administration of HPV vaccines with other recommended adolescent vaccines, and we'll conduct a special study to evaluate intervals between the doses, especially dose 2 and 3. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues at the 2004-2007 Sentinel site areas of Arizona, DC, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, and Oregon, and my colleagues at the CDC. Thank you.
Okay, this session is now open for questions, if there are any, for any of the speakers.
I know everybody wants to go to dinner. I just wanted to know, I went on the thing on syncope with the HPV and the Tdap and the Menactra. Are you recommending that they be given separately because of the increased problems with syncope, or are you really recommending because it's an 11 to 12-year-old thing that they all be given together?
The recommendation is that the vaccine can be given simultaneously with other recommended vaccines in that age group.
Hi, Cindy Rand from University of Rochester. I have just two quick questions. First, for the vaccines for the 27 to 45-year-olds, is there any intention to treat analysis for people who are not seronegative?
Yeah, they have not done that yet. I assume the reason is the data are early and they don't have enough, follow-up to look at that. But that is exactly the issue in terms of what will be the population effectiveness of the vaccine in that age group. And so that's something that's really been discussed a lot. And so this was an interim analysis. They had two and a half years of follow-up, and they will be continuing the analysis on that data.
Thanks.
It's a good question.
The other question is about linking between the surveillance and the vaccine administration. Were some of those studies that Eileen mentioned about surveillance also looking at how many doses and how far apart people had gotten them?
No, the vaccine
are they
linking is going to be one of the challenging aspects to some of these monitoring projects. As far as looking specifically at dosing intervals in these surveillance systems, I think the biggest goal right now is actually seeing how the link will occur, and then that would be a secondary question, and that's still a challenging area. Like, will it be registries? Will there be interviews? How will that be conducted? But I think that's an important point, is also looking at those issues as well as far as impact of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
VSD would be able to do that, yeah. VSD or VSD project.
My name is Meg from California. I have a question for Dr. Markowitz. What do we know about duration of immunity following natural infection with HPV, and if women who have cleared infections can become reinfected?
Yeah, that is another really good question. There are a lot of unanswered, well, not a lot, but there are remaining unanswered questions on the natural history of HPV, and that is one of them. And actually, some of the best data we'll have on that will be from the vaccine trials, because they have followed the placebo arm, and they will be able to look at that. And we also have data from some cohort studies, and there are some conflicting data, but we do know that some women do appear to, the same type can be detected in women after they have a seemingly cleared infection. It's unclear, though, when that happens, whether or not it's actually a new infection or the infection actually has been there and it's just reactivating and reappearing. So I think that's something that really needs a lot more investigation. I think there will be more data on that coming out.
I'm Linda from Idaho. So what endpoint are they using for males in the trial to show that it's working?
For the males, they're going to be looking at genital warts. They're going to look at persistent HPV infection. And they do have some MSM enrolled, and they're going to be looking at anal intraepithelial neoplasia for that group. Okay. Some housekeeping issues. Well, first, I want to thank the presenters, and I want to thank everyone for staying around. For this late session. And so these are the housekeeping announcements. Stop by the CE room in the Fayette room, to apply for continuing education credits or to request a certificate of attendance. And the conference staff is available until 5:30 today and until 1 p.m. tomorrow to help you with your continuing education application. And you can also apply for this on the internet. So if you visit that room, you'll be able to get more information. You're invited to join the conference planners tonight at 6 p.m. in the Fulton Cobb Clayton room. And tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., start the day right by participating in the Funky Abs and Thighs fitness event, also in the Fulton Cobb Clayton room, and arrive 15 minutes early for both events so you can sign up. This is great. I haven't had so many announcements to read after a session in a long time. Okay, the next session will begin tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. See pages 29 and 30 of your agenda book for more detailed information about tomorrow morning's session. And don't forget to complete and submit your conference evaluation form. You'll find it behind the last tab in your agenda book. Also, stop by the registration desk if you want to request a receipt for your registration fee, and registration receipts will be available on the internet following the conference. And finally, please note that a light continental breakfast will be available in the grand ballroom level near the information and hospitality desk tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Okay, thank you, everyone.